Welcome back. It's a Monday, the 17th day of December, 2018. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And yes, there's a whole lot going on from markets to madness, and there's some redundancy in that as well. But I want to start off today with some good news from an unlikely source. At least it certainly surprised me. Sam Harris, says Wikipedia, popular American author, philosopher, neuroscientist, critic of religion. And that's an understatement. He's generally considered one of the foremost atheists in America. Has done something downright amazing and certainly noteworthy. And no, folks, your host is certainly not a fan of the man, but I have to give credit where credit is due. And in this case, that amounts to bravo, since I don't think he'd appreciate an amen. Sam Harris, says the Gateway Pundit Summary, is also the 13th most popular account on Patreon, a media platform that provides business tools, at least if you're a good little slave, for artists, writers, and creators to run a subscription content service and raise money from various supporters or patrons. Like PayPal and quite a few other lesser-known services, they've also gone quite a bit over-the-top fascist of late, basically saying, if you're not politically correct enough for us, we'll do exactly what Big Brother's public-private partners are so anxious to do, and that's starve you for funds. We'll cut you off from your supporters. As you know, this has been going on for a while, but it really went into warp drive when the public-private fascist partnership decided to take on a big boy like Alex Jones and see if they couldn't destroy him. And having basically succeeded there, they've moved on to all kinds of lesser targets. There have been tons and tons of examples of late, primarily prominent conservatives. And having watched all of that, it seems like Sam Harris has finally decided he's had enough. And on Sunday, the prominent atheist removed his account voluntarily from Patreon. And here's a part of what he wrote. Dear Patreon supporters, he said, as many of you know, the crowdfunding site Patreon has banned several prominent content creators from its platform. While the company insists that each was in violation of its terms of service, these recent expulsions seem more readily explained by political bias. Although I don't share the politics of the banned members, and while that's putting it mildly, I do admire his integrity. Your host has to interject here. I no longer consider it tenable to expose any part of my podcast funding to the whims of Patreon's Trust and Safety Committee. And I can't help but think all of us can see the irony in that. Anyway, he says, I'll be deleting my Patreon account tomorrow if you want to continue sponsoring my work, and he gives a link. The Gateway Pundit, which knows very well this kind of fascism firsthand, noted that the CEO of Patreon, Jack Conte, went on a popular YouTube show last year to assure creators they could trust him not to punish people for their speech. Yeah, sure. And a lot of folks actually bought it up until some of the most recent blatant examples, including the banning of Carl Benjamin, a.k.a. the recent Sargon incident. Alan Bukhari at Breitbart wrote recently about the hypocrisy of Patreon, quote, calling for violence from leftists while demonetizing conservatives, giving a number of examples of far-left sites that are just fine, so far as the progressive gatekeepers are concerned anyway, threatening people with outright undeniable violence. And when all is said and done, I do like the way that Jim Hoff summarized it for the Gateway Pundit. Sam Harris is not conservative, but he's not a fascist either. And on Sunday night, Sam Harris became a hero to all for his courageous defense of free speech. We'll follow that up with another one that's also kind of, sort of, at least, good news. It does also kind of illustrate the divide, too. Sometimes people do the right things for the wrong reasons. This one came from Zero Hedge on Sunday night under the headline, They Used Us for Crisis PR. And it says, Facebook's fact checkers, sick, are in open revolt. A group of former and current fact checkers hired by Facebook to flag what they call false news have now come forward to say they've lost trust in the socialist media giant, not because it's socialist, mind you, after it did little to actually crack down on fake news, said Brooke Binkowski, a former editor for Snopes, which partnered with Facebook for 2 years. They've essentially used us for crisis PR, she told The Guardian. Another journalist said, we were just collateral damage, unquote, at a time during and after the 2016 presidential election when fake news was a front and center topic in national debate. And the point is that not only has Facebook ignored the expertise of the very fact-checkers it hired, perhaps because they were so far left, but those interviewed for the explosive Guardian report pointed out the hypocrisy of Facebook executives over the recent Soros scandal, wherein the company admitted to paying a Republican PR firm, how dare they, to cast liberal critics as operatives for leftist financier George Soros following that shocking expose in the New York Times back on November 14th. Essentially, says the story, Facebook's crisis PR firm pushed a Soros conspiracy in order to smear critics in a bizarre fake news planning false flag scenario, likely personally ordered by Chief Operating Officer Sheryl Sandberg herself, who's come under fire for late for increasingly incredible levels of hypocrisy. One Facebook fact-checker who wanted to remain anonymous explained to The Guardian, quote, "Why should we trust Facebook when it's pushing the same rumors that its own fact-checkers are calling fake news?" And another added, and I love this, "Working with Facebook makes us look bad," unquote. Citing all of these scandals and general apathy for actually implementing fact-checkers' expertise, journalists working in coordination with, and I'm going to say it properly now, to Facebook, are finally pushing to end the controversial media partnership, which involves established media as well as so-called fact-checking outlets like the AP, PolitiFact, FactCheck.org, ABC News, and Snopes, acting in tandem with to Facebook to flag fake or questionable news. So they say. Perhaps the most stunning comments included in the Guardian report were from the aforementioned Snopes editor Brooke Binkowski, says Zero Hedge, who claimed that her pleas to research and monitor propaganda related to the Rohingya crisis in Myanmar fell on deaf ears. Quote, "I was bringing up Myanmar over and over and over," she said. "They were absolutely resistant." So as a result, she concluded, quote, "I strongly believe that they are spreading fake news on behalf of hostile foreign powers and authoritarian governments as part of their business model," unquote. Well, she's getting about half of it anyway. She doesn't recognize that not all of the authoritarian governments are hostile foreign powers, unless you talk about being hostile and foreign to what was formerly the constitutional government here. Other fact-checkers accuse Facebook of desiring, quote, "the appearance of trying to prevent damage without actually doing anything," and Binkowski went on to say that at least on one occasion, it appeared that Facebook was pushing reporters to prioritize debunking misinformation that affected Facebook advertisers, which she thought crossed a line. Quote, "You're not doing journalism anymore, you're doing propaganda," unquote. So the good news here appears to be that even fact-checkers for the likes of Snopes can occasionally see propaganda when it smacks them right between the eyes. More kind of sort of good news from the home of the European Union, where thousands came out to rally against the UN Migration Pact outside the headquarters of the EU itself. Via RT, police deployed water cannons over the weekend during a rally against what they call the controversial, to put it mildly, UN Migration Pact that basically codifies and mandates the continuing Islamic invasion of Europe and intends to spread it to the rest of the world in Brussels. The rally was dubbed the March Against Marrakesh in reference to the city where the pact was signed earlier in December, whether the people of these countries liked it or not. And this one was organized by the right-wing group, their words, Vlaams Belang, which has long been a vocal opponent of the agreement. And while things initially kicked off peacefully, the demonstrations started to heat up when some of the participants began burning firecrackers and hurling bottles as they marched down the street. And gee, folks, having seen this from the inside, I'm willing to bet at least some of those were paid provocateurs. As we've come to expect, riot police, it says, marched out in full riot gear to quell the unease, and they later moved in with water cannons and other non-lethal weaponry against some of the protesters. Some people, says the story, were injured. No word yet on just how serious those were. In the United States, leftist traitors continue working really hard to bring that same kind of invasion here. Maybe I should say continue that same kind of invasion here. One of the very worst was on Meet the Depressed on Sunday, where the head of the Senate Communists, Chuckie Schumer of New York, dug in, saying that President Trump is, quote, "not going to get the wall in any form." And he accused the president of having a, quote, "temper tantrum" and being willing to allow a government shutdown to do what he was elected to. So he said, "since they're bound and determined to make sure that nothing is going to change in that regard, I don't know why we don't just proceed to keep government open so that people can be home for the holidays," unquote. And you know what, folks? I can't help thinking that's an even more asinine, idiotic command than Chuckie Schumer usually makes when he despises things like the Bill of Rights. You do have to ask, If the government was really to be shut down, what's keeping people from being home for the holidays? If anything, this is just another admission that the so-called government shutdown is yet another great big fat whopper anyway. Zero Hedge, though, quotes one of those economic predict-it sites. This was actually called predict-it, and they claim the odds of a government shutdown spiked to 58%. On the news, nearly double what it was just 24 hours earlier. A freshman representative on the Republican leadership team, Paul Mitchell of Michigan, says the odds are even higher, that they're, quote, 65-35, we're shutting down, unquote. Another Republican lawmaker quoted by The Hill added, Trump will get the blame, but he won't care, and the base will love him for it. Over the weekend, said Zero Hedge, the president shockingly declared that he would be proud to take credit for a shutdown if he doesn't get that wall. Quote, if we don't get what we want, one way or the other, I will shut down the government. Absolutely. Said Trump during a segment broadcast live, I am proud to shut down the government for border security. Unquote. And here, folks, your host does have to weigh in, not for the first time on this particular topic, since by almost any reasonable estimate, fully 90% of all FedGov spending is absolutely unconstitutional, if you actually read the text anyway. And furthermore, if you note that the parts that are least likely to actually get shut down are the most unconstitutional, that almost all of us would probably be a lot better off if they stay shut down permanently, and we know that's not going to happen. And furthermore, that the main thing that most people would even notice would be things like closures at the national parks, which, come to think of it, also aren't constitutional anyway, so neither are the closures. I have to agree with the president that if they actually follow through with it, this is a winner. Go ahead, shut it down. Shut it down for real, even. Keep it shut down and see if anybody notices. Heck, it might end up even being his biggest contribution to economic prosperity so far. Here next, for example, one thing that definitely won't be affected by a Big Brother shutdown, and that's the continued stonewalling of actual justice by the department thereof, allegedly, and the FBI. Couple of stories to make the point. FBI misses the deadline, again, says Greg Reed at Fox News, to provide documents to the Judiciary Committee probing the most recent stonewalling, that FBI raid on a whistleblower. Gee, let's try to pretend we're surprised. The documents in question allegedly showed that federal officials failed to investigate possible criminal activity related to, guess who? The Clintons, the Clinton Foundation, Rosatom, and of course some of the main players here, like Robert Mueller. All right, admittedly, that's not news. We've been talking about it. But I guess the continued stonewalling is a little bit newsworthy anyway. And what your host found most interesting in the Fox update were a couple of tweets from the victimized whistleblower himself, Nate Kane, who wrote, First, that as frustrating and violating as this feels to me and my family, he said, I'll continue to put my trust in God. And after the feedback he got from that somewhat lengthy tweet, he followed up with, Thank you for the outpouring of encouragement. Y'all are awesome. A boxer goes into his corner to rest for a minute, refocus, and get some sideline coaching. Then the bell rings, and he's ready to go for another round. This fight, he said, is spiritual, and God is in our corner. Ding! And then he cites Romans 8:31. If God is for us, who can be against us? Here's another related piece. Deep State FBI and DOJ worked at warp drive speed in order to frame General Michael Flynn in the incoming Trump administration. After they were caught, says Joe Hoft in the Gateway Pundit, they delayed for months providing evidence to the U.S. Senate and the DOJ Inspector General's office and eventually did what we've come to expect. They destroyed that evidence that would have clearly demonstrated their criminal deeds. In this case, although we've had a strong suspicion for a long time, the FBI and Mueller's team wiped literally all of the data off of the lovers' cell phones, Peter Strzok and his partner in crime, Lisa Page. And are you ready for the excuse? Trust us. Quote, it contained no substantive text messages. Well, one thing's for sure, they certainly don't now. But come to think of it, neither did Hillary's disk drives. Late last week, this came out, obviously when none of the waste stream was watching, the only known 302 report, that's the way the FBI covers up interview lies rather than actually having recordings, that was provided by Robert Mueller to Judge Emerson this week was a report created on, are you sitting down, July 19th, 2017, a full 6 months after General Flynn was set up by FBI agents in the White House back in January. So basically what we have is this. They evidently altered the first 302 reports, got caught, deep sixed those, and then came up with another one 6 months later that covers up everything oh so nicely. This is huge, wrote Mike Cernovich, but only, of course, if the American people ever hear about it. Here's Jim Hoff's summary. Dirty cop Robert Mueller took the 302 report from Peter Strzok after there was strong evidence Strzok was caught plotting against the president none of them wanted to see in office, Donald Trump. And furthermore, the 302 report interview evidently took place after his lover was caught and quit, and before he, too, was caught and then fired from the special counsel. And then the Mueller witch hunt team scrubbed his phone clean before turning it over to so-called investigators. Is there a pattern here? Obviously, folks, it's taking forever. But the more that continues to very slowly leak out, the more we find why it is that the DOJ and the FBI is so intent on stonewalling and covering up all of their treasonous perfidy. And you know they're thinking if they can just make it to January, they won't have anything to worry about. We do have to follow that up with this brief story about the man who's probably the most criminally corrupt individual in Washington that hasn't run for president, Robert Mueller. J.D. Hayes at Natural News takes us on a stroll down memory lane. When Special Counsel Robert Mueller was first appointed more than a year ago, critics pointed out there was no justification for it. It was all clearly political because there was no indication of any crime, and so-called collusion with Russia, even if it had happened, isn't illegal. Mueller raised eyebrows again when he brought in persecutors, that's the right pronunciation, on board, who'd blown cases in the past by inventing evidence, and we've gotten used to that now, haven't we, such as the corruption case, and they put it in quotes, against former U.S. Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska. Critics chimed in again after Mueller hired a number of persecutors with known connections to Democrats, especially Hillary Clinton and Barry Sotero, several of whom actually donated to their campaigns, and throughout his, investigation into alleged nefarious behavior surrounding the now POTUS and his 2016 campaign, Mueller's done much to warrant the criticism he's received. And now he's under fire again for something so obviously wrong it defies belief that he's still being allowed to continue his so-called investigation. And he's talking about the same destruction of evidence we just mentioned, the cell phones, which were scrubbed squeaky clean. They didn't even have to use bleach bit. But wait, when it comes to corruption, there's more. Would you believe the DOJ has no record of who actually took custody of the phones and reset them? Isn't that amazing? We would be remiss on a Monday if we didn't at least point out that when it comes to corruption and all the deep state swamp evil that was, at least briefly, just finally starting to come out, the real key is to follow the money, even if it's fake money. This is, after all, the week that the unconstitutional, but who cares, public-private money-printing partnership is due to announce yet another attempt to prick the bubble by raising rates. So is the long-awaited meltdown finally at hand? Well, we got some headlines to lay that one out. Ringing the bell, says the first one from the Zero Hedge folks. Stocks have turned in their worst December since 1980 so far, and the NASDAQ is now red year-to-date. The Dow's back below 24,000. As a matter of fact, while I'm doing this part of the recording, the Dow's down over 360 points. It's been lower, and it's just above 23,700. The NASDAQ's down another 100 points or so, too. And some analysts are asking, did stocks just ring the bell? And will the FOMC turn the lights out on Wednesday, or step in one more time, along with the plunge protection team, to save the day? The UK's Daily Mail is among those expressing some dubious reservations about the state of the markets. Here's one of their headlines from this morning. Analysts anticipate a huge financial wipeout is coming, they say in great big bold print, as major hedge funds close or report losses this quarter. Analysts believe hundreds of them could be shuttered by the end of next year, 2019. Closures, though, could be uneven due to uneven returns seen by managers using similar tactics. It's still thought, though, that investigators will be withdrawing money from funds without profits. They've already taken over $10 billion out of their hedge funds this year, and more than 11,000 funds are said to oversee $3 trillion in assets, well, at least for now. Here's a note from Zero Hedge on the coming bond market meltdown, too. The bond market, says a headline on Monday morning, has frozen for the first month since 2008. Not a single junk bond has priced. Evidently, that means folks are waking up. The trouble lenders have faced as the conclusion of the story in the leveraged loan market has mirrored the exasperation felt by investors in other asset classes. Higher quality investment-grade bonds have also sold off, with a number of planned deals pulled from the market in recent weeks. And for now, the junk bond freeze and loan indigestion has remained confined to lower-rated issuers. However, that may change too, and should what they're calling the ICE 9 spread to the high-grade sector, where the bulk of issuance is to fund things like buybacks and mergers and acquisitions, that's when the real pain begins. On the eve of the Fed's big rate decision on Wednesday, President Trump, says another story, is again bashing the Federal Reserve over their plans to raise interest rates at a time when markets are already in chaos and, as he puts it, the world is blowing up thanks in part to the central bank's double-barreled blitz of higher rates and tighter liquidity. Still, though, we do remember who they want to blame for it. Here's how the president tweeted it. It's incredible that with a very strong dollar and virtually no inflation, the outside world blowing up around us, Paris is burning and China way down, the Fed is even considering yet another interest rate hike. Take the victory, he suggests. And this tweet follows a widely discussed op-ed by publisher and investor Stanley Druckenmiller and former Fed Governor Kevin Warsh, who became the latest establishment heretics to side with the president over the economic establishment by urging the Fed to stop raising interest rates before something really does break. The Zero Hedge headline says, well, this is awkward. Trump is right, as the Fed's Warsh and Druckenmiller urge, not now, when it comes to further tightening. And finally, there's this from author and analyst Mike or Mish Shedlock via his site Mishtalk. It really has been a long, strange trip, he says, when after 10 years, we're finally getting back to what's being called normalcy. Yeah, non-negative real interest rates. Notice they don't use that terminology anymore. Now they call it normalizing, and somehow it's a brave new world. Interest rates that actually match the rate of inflation. Imagine that. Well, says Mish, after 10 years, we're finally getting close to back to normal. Don't expect it to last. This should be funny. Who knows? Maybe it could even happen in the criminally corrupt United States in what's being called an unprecedented move that possibly foreshadows other charges from other nations and lots of headaches for the recently retired Goldman Sachs CEO Lloyd Blankfein. The Attorney General of Malaysia has filed criminal charges against the vampire squid Goldman Sachs, targeting two of the investment bank's Asian subsidiaries and two former Goldman banksters who've already been charged by the U.S. Basically, they're alleged to have lied in bond agreements that raised $6.5 billion for a Malaysian sovereign wealth fund. And yes, Goldman stock is down on the news, nearing two-year lows. We close with two more brief stories that really do sound very familiar. The first one's out of Germany via LifeSite News. And it concerns the German Federal Ministry for Family Affairs, SICK, that supported a brochure aimed at changing the behavior of preschool-aged children who are raised by what the Germans now call right-wing parents who dare to oppose politically correct dogma like gender theory, sexual diversity, the sexualization of children, and of course, the Islamic invasion, a.k.a. immigration. Some have pointed out that it's a lot like what the National Socialists and Communist dictatorships have been up to for a long time, but there's a lot of pressure on these folks to keep their mouths shut if they want to keep their kids. Which leads me to this piece from Paul Joseph Watson via Prison Planet, and he writes from the UK, about how people from both the right and the left seem to have lost faith, especially in Europe, in the political elite and the media. And he quotes a French philosopher named Alain de Benoist, who says that the Yellow Vest movement is historic and unlike any other protest. He notes that the protesters are driven by two factors, cultural insecurity, driven in turn by mass migration, and social insecurity, driven by the soaring cost of living. And he notes that when these two factors blend, a rebellion is inevitable. And the huge support that the Yellow Vests have, estimated to be 70% in some polls, is a telling factor, he says, and a sign that people have completely lost faith in the so-called political elite, not to mention the fake news mass media. The question remains, though, is what's coming going to look more like the American Revolution for freedom or a bloody reprise of the earlier French Revolution? The difference being, may Yahuwah bless you and yours.